This is the Shift Podcast.
Today on the Shift Daily Podcast, the Bank of Canada thinks high wages are partially to blame for inflation, but is it even true? Dominic Lapointe, Manulife Global Macro Strategist, helps us make sense of inflation. We get into the real reasons for high prices and what could help bring them down. Flashback Friday, what did we look like for inflation in the early 80s? 1983, Flashback Friday, when inflation was high and prices were way lower than today. You won't believe how cheap bacon was too, by the way. It's coming up. And are you okay with selling your home? And so much more. If you've been listening to The Shift recently, you'll hear we've talked a lot about wages. Just this week, we were talking about wages for young people and how in Alberta, you know, young people get all these bumps and, oh my God, they can't make ends meet. But the people in the middle, I've shared my opinion many times. It's the problem is not the $15 worker or the $17, $18 worker that gets a raise. It's the $25 worker that never gets a raise. And that disparity between the younger people or the lower paid people and those mid-range employees is getting closer and closer and closer. So why do you need to have experience in a business anymore when you can go make almost the same amount of money without experience and be on the bottom end of the pay scale? It's problematic. But is this wage thing pushing inflation? Is it driving some of this economic piece? I get pitched every day on, oh, by the way, the price of the restaurants is going up because of minimum wage, blah, blah, blah. Well, there's a lot of reasons why prices in restaurants are going up. But I got to tell you, I think restaurants that I've been to have done a very good job at managing their prices comparatively to what we're paying in the grocery store, without a doubt. And I think they're doing a good job. So I salute the small businesses there for their attempts to keep things attainable, if you will. We wanted to dig more into this. And so we are about to do that. Dominic Lapointe is here. He's joining us from Montreal. He is a strategist, investment management at Manulife, and is here to save our financial woes. Dominic, save the day now. How are you?
Good. Yourself?
I'm good. Thank you very much. The basic driver is the people who blame wages for inflation. It's not that simple. Absolutely worth considering. An important piece of the puzzle. But how does it really look for you guys when you look at what are wages, what are the impacts of all this? Where do you start?
Yeah, I mean, it's undeniable. I think wages, to some degree, have an impact in the end on what consumers pay for certain types of services. And we can dig into that in a second. But I want to go back one step further and say, when we look at the inflation we're seeing today and we look at what caused it first, it was during the pandemic, just going out of it, people just buying a lot of goods. But people wanting to buy a new car, renovate their house, buying furniture, electronics, and we had supply chain problem, big bottlenecks, delays. And so when you look at what caused inflation first, and that, when you break it down, still break it down to this day, what's causing inflation in Canada, there's a big part that is coming from goods, right? Everything that I've mentioned, plus gasoline, for example. And on these categories, you cannot only blame wages, for sure, like input costs, material costs, transportation costs, also factor into what we pay in the end. So wages are part of it, but for a large part of the inflation we're still seeing today, a lot of other reasons, a lot of other factors are affecting the end price for consumers.
I feel like politically, and I know that in your world, you don't have to even comment on the politics because it's not really, you're the economics person. So, but the easy out for the government is to blame the wages. Now, the irony is it's the one thing the governments have been doing to try to make the people happy. So that's their emergency exit, if you will, their escape hatch is to say, well, you wanted more money, we gave you more money, so it's not our fault. And yet they do turn that around. You spoke of a few things. You talk about supply chain. You talk about all those pieces. We often think of wages only as the end user, the server in the restaurant, the cook in the kitchen, right? Yep. The cashier checkout at the grocery store. Wages, though, in fairness, need to be considered because they are everybody who stacks the pallet, well, produces the product, stacks the pallet, puts the shipping label, puts it in the truck, drives the truck, unloads the truck. There is a wage increase all the way along that supply chain again and again and again, and it must eventually start to really compound to chip away just a little bit at those numbers, in all fairness.
Oh, for sure. But the reality also in Canada is that we had labor shortages before the pandemic, mostly for what we would say the most qualified workers, people working in tech, people working into high-end services. And what the pandemic created was that for people that are working into what we usually say lower qualification, maybe younger people, the pandemic created labor shortages in those categories. And then you mentioned from the start the fact that wages in those categories are rising faster than for the high-end categories. And so that's really the problem we're facing, is that across all industries right now in Canada, we're missing people, public sector, private sector. And so in the end, I think businesses don't have a choice. If they want to retain their worker, if they want to attract workers, especially when people change job at the moment, they have to give higher wages. And so how in the end, the end business providing the service will reflect it to consumer. They can either adapt, absorb the higher wages through lower profit margin, or they can pass it on to consumers. So once again, it's not like wages are not the only factor, but we have to admit that businesses don't have choice to provide those wages at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, and isn't it a business? It's such a business philosophy question, because you know there are a lot of businesses out there. They pay a premium for their people. They retain the people, and they save that back in things like hiring, headhunting, training, retraining. And then you have other businesses that pay as little as they can, and they're constantly burning through people. And yet that business that pays more somehow is more profitable, more productive, all the things. And if you go across, I was about a year ago, I was in Ireland, and I went to send a tip, and my friend from Belfast said, oh yeah, you don't have to do that. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm fine. They said, oh yeah, you just round up to the dollar and leave it. Well, don't you tip here? Like, no, they get paid good wages. They don't want a tip or care for a tip. I mean, you can if you want, but it's not an expectation here because they get paid good wages. And yet you still see more pubs and more restaurants and everything else. So There has to be a magical way to dance with all of this. And is that where we get free of the conversation of wages and blaming wages at this and get into managing money, managing resources, and all the other things that are going on? Is that how we should probably be looking at it?
Yeah, there's a couple of interesting things you just said about tipping and the way it seems that businesses that pay higher wages or offer good conditions also are profitable. Having workers leaving is costly. Finding workers is costly now. It takes time. When you're missing workers, it puts more pressure on other workers. And so normally you would think that your productivity as a business is being reduced when you're missing those workers. So that's probably one way of explaining why you pay good wages. And not only wages, but I would say conditions, right? Working hours.
Yeah, I like when you say that, conditions, good working conditions where someone feels like they're welcome, they're looking forward to work, it's productive, it works for them financially, they feel like they have a future. I like that when you say conditions, yeah.
Exactly. Working shift, right? I live in Quebec, and one of the big sticking point for public sector nurses is the fact that they're forced, and that's the real word, they're forced to do extra time, and they don't want to do that anymore. And so that caused nurses in the public sector to go work in the private sector, which increased the pressure on the other nurses leaving. And that in the end, it's just more costly for the system.
Yeah. Well, and isn't that the case, right? When your buddy down the hallway takes a vacation, he's gone for 3 days, but there's nobody really to replace him and everyone else just has to pick up the slack. That doesn't really make for an environment where everyone feels like it's awesome, right? So, but these things are all, they're very not tangible. They're very experiential to what goes on in economics. And to me, this conversation really is where the answers lie, right? It's kind of like an unrelated when you talk about economics that, you know, the government wants to bring 1 million immigrants into Canada. And I love Canada's makeup. I'm like, yep, let's be the melting pot of the world. I love that. But you can't bring 1 million people into Canada and not have a plan for housing. And that's the kind of stuff we're seeing in the economics of it, the hard numbers. They pumped a lot of money. They printed a lot of money into the world, right? And yes, we can reconcile that and, you know, audit that for decades, whether it was right or wrong or bad, but it seemed to work in some ways. And so there's a lot more money out there. And, you know, the fuel thing, I don't want to get too humanitarian on it, but the reality was, is if you'd thought that those oil companies that were losing their shirts when the price of oil was so low, I mean, I think I paid 76 cents or something during the pandemic.
Yeah.
If you don't think those people were going to make back that money at some point, mm-hmm. you're darn right they're going to do that, right? If we're going through the trouble of riding this out, we're going to shore up our future. So how do the economics work out around the money? Because if inflation is a thing and all this money's out there, how do you somehow curb this without, I mean, the age-old way, and maybe this language is too simple, was to sort of squeeze out. You got to squeeze a bunch of players out of the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. When you look at what we call money creation, right? When the government was spending a lot, and at the same time, the Bank of Canada was also buying a lot of government bonds. And it wasn't to, it's not true that it was to bail out the government. I don't think that's accurate. The real reason why they were doing it is to keep interest rates very, very low so that people can consume, banks can lend money, which creates even more money. But what they're both doing now, the way out of this is what the Bank of Canada is actually doing, which is raising interest rates and also stop buying government bonds. So when those bonds mature, they're not buying more. So it's sort of the way that some money disappears from the system.
Yeah.
It's harder to consume. And at the same time, some of that money that households have accumulated, well, prices are pretty high right now. It's tough, right? Like, it's tough to consume. And so people keep on consuming. That extra cushion is being slowly spent as we speak. So different ways, but the money is coming off slowly. It just takes more time than we wish.
How do you manage that, though, as you plan this out, Dominic? Because you got, I mean, an awful lot of those businesses are looking to recoup those losses. And, you know, that, I don't know, that jar of peanut butter that used to be $4, that's now $6. That's an imaginary number, by the way. A hypothetical that, I mean, chances are they're not really going to drop it down to $4 ever again. I mean, the car that used to be $10,000 is now $20,000. It's not like they're going to sell the car next year for $15 because they can. Do we ever really recover from this, or do we adapt and plug the holes in the leaky boat, if you will, to be able to navigate it differently?
Yeah, I think it's important to be realistic about that, and it's a good point you're making. What we're aiming for, what the Bank of Canada is aiming for, is not to lower prices to where they were. That's impossible, unless you create some sort of big recession, right? Where it's going to be hard on,
and that's really the only way that those numbers get smaller, isn't it?
To reduce prices, exactly. Yeah. What we're going for is prices just stop increasing at for some 5-10% on a yearly basis to go back to somewhat 2-3% increase, which is more manageable and predictable for people. I think that's what people can or should expect. Maybe by the half of next year, some sort of back to normalcy. But we also do think that, unfortunately, because rates have been rising so fast, it takes a while to filter through the system. Just look at, not many people have renewed their mortgage at higher rate now.
Yeah,
and so when this happened, unfortunately, we think that there's going to be, for many households, it's going to be harder as the year go by.
Yeah, so if somebody, they raised rates a year ago, but they don't renew for 3 years, that's what they're looking at, right? Is that if it doesn't come down, we could see a real prolonged, I would call that an echo, right?
Yeah.
An echo effect that it keeps resonating and resonating and resonating down the road. And that must become problematic. Okay, so with Manulife, Dominic Lapointe is here. And what do you get excited about in all this, though? I mean, you hear, and I love doing business and all those things. There are opportunities in this, but a lot of people feel the squeeze, and it's hurtful for me to say that this is good news. I mean, there's opportunity here. I mean, that becomes really hurtful for somebody who can't afford to buy groceries, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody who's on a fixed income, like a government support. And so how do you look at this and try to be excited about what's coming from this? Is there anything that you guys, when, I don't know, I imagine you financial people sit around with like stacks of money and you're like, ha-ha, we're going to do great and help these people that are our customers. Ha-ha, I don't know.
Yeah, well, what we do in our team is we try to provide what we, this kind of discussion we have here to help our portfolio managers just provide for most of our clients is our retirement incomes, right? So getting the returns that will actually offset some of that inflation, for example. But to your question, I think for many people now, the fact that the labor market is so tight, there are opportunities, right? Well, I'm going to give you one example. During the pandemic, the number of self-employed people with their own thing got reduced by a lot. But what those people ended up doing is either they go back to school, they could, they had the time to do it, and the government was also sending the check so that they could actually mm-hmm. live on that while they were training themselves. Some of them went working for a business at a big premium. So depending on where you're sitting, there might still be some good opportunities to move ahead, right? And then depending on how things unfold next year, if demand can slow down in an orderly fashion, when instead of seeing some sort of a crash, we do see, well, people just moderate their consumption a little bit. They're not going to buy that new car, not going to try to flip their house this year. Then maybe inflation can, and I'm saying maybe because that's unfortunately we can't be sure about that. But if that's the case, inflation can slowly come down, then we're going to be in a situation where still going to be good opportunities for workers. And at the same time, this inflation problem will slowly diminish. So that would be an optimistic view. What we think, unfortunately, is that because interest rates, so I'm repeating myself here, but the mortgage situation is harder for some Canadians, will get harder for some Canadians. But in terms of the opportunities, there's a case to be made that there will still be some opportunities next year.
And that, like that mortgage thing, when it's basically zero, I mean, that in itself sounds great. It's great for everybody who's looking at that one price point. But fundamentally, free money becomes problematic in your world, doesn't it? Because, I mean, people overspend, they overcommit or whatever, and it becomes kind of bloated and artificial. I mean, I realize those are not proper industry terms. I don't know the industry terms, but in the spirit of what I'm saying, I mean, it really becomes hard to figure out what is true. And I would apply this. It's almost like when people have a job and wages and a salary, but then they have a side hustle to make ends meet, it also makes it difficult to tell, are they actually doing okay because they're doing multiples of jobs? Those things sort of convolute and cloud some of these numbers, don't they?
Yeah. As for mortgages, and that's right, in terms of in hindsight, right? Having very, very low interest rates in a country where for decades we've had like undersupply of houses, that probably creates a situation where house prices are going high too fast. So if you're already in the market, it's good for you. You have a house, you're going to sell it for way more. If you're not in the market, good luck getting in the market, unfortunately. And now what we're seeing is prices have come down a little, but not nearly enough to offset the fact that you're paying a lot more on interest rates when you want to get the mortgage. So even with your salary, even with that side hustle, what we do see now is there's still some fundamental demand. But the situation for housing is that people just don't want to sell in a down market. People don't want to renew at a higher rate. So prices are actually, incredibly, prices in Canada are rebounding as we speak, with mortgages around 5%.
That's interesting. We also are complacent human beings, so we tend to just get used to it and then move along. But here's one thing that I've done, and maybe you can contribute with something either from your life or through work that you see, is that I've gone around looking at my place. I've been selling everything I can out of my place, only because of the fact that I need to get rid of it. But what I've discovered in that is that there are many things that I've had for a year or two that are basically brand new. Pick an item. The item was $100 when I bought it. I used it once or twice, and I put it away, and I haven't been using it. So I go to sell it. What do you do when you go to sell it? Well, you go look and see how much it costs today. Oh, by the way, it's $125 now. So you can actually sell a used one for the same amount you paid for it, or at least close to that, because the price, this inflation has raised the price of the new ones substantially higher. So there is some opportunity with things we have around the house that, not to be forgotten, yes, they've probably depreciated because that's what they are. But the reality is that they actually could be as much as the new one, and there could be a whole new demand that gets kind of created in that secondary market.
Oh, yeah. Let me give you the example of used car. Like right now, there are, and I guess anyone who wants to buy a car now or try to buy a car, a new car over the past years, have seen the car is not ready. Like, or there's delays,
Yeah,
any
weeks,
models.
months.
And so what would you do? Well, I'm gonna try to get a used one, right? And you add on to that, for example, the fact that rental companies, because they can't get the new cars, well, they're holding on to the used car. So what usually happens is that when the rental company is done with the car, you want to get a new one, they're gonna sell it on the used market. Those cars are not flowing through the used market. So my point is, selling a car on the used car market now, maybe you would usually see a price for a used car being way lower than a new one. But that gap has shrank quite a bit over the past 2 years because there's no new cars available, and that means there's only so much used cars available. So selling a used cars could be pretty profitable at the moment.
Well, add to that the pandemic and those used car companies. What they did was they actually liquidated a lot of the inventory that they were carrying for weight. But as soon as the demand was there and no one could get the parts, they're like, well, liquidate all of these rental cars because we don't need 10,000 of them. We only need 1,000 right now. And then now they're also trying to get theirs back. And so now they flooded the market, which was good to buy. And then now there's even more demand. So, I mean, so goes the cycle, hey, of all of it. I mean, it really is a turning cycle, roller coaster, yo-yo, say, call it what you want.
And also the fact that, just to finish with cars, the fact that for 2 years you had very, very, very low interest rates on getting finances for that car. So I'd say once again, the way to be optimistic about that is that it's now way more expensive if you want to get a loan for a car. The banks are also a little more restrictives into the terms of the financing. So you project yourself 1 year out. If demand for car actually go down at the same time as we're gonna get new ones eventually, then maybe if you want to get that new car, you'll get it at a price that it's not gonna be a lower price. It's gonna be a price that stopped increasing by 10%.
Yeah, they lock in the price. Buy it today, and it might cost more a year from now, but you're going to get it at today's price, which is cool. Okay, so Dominic Lapointe is here. Thanks for this chat. But before we go, I want to say I know that you're not allowed to dole out advice. It's one of the sort of things that you guys stand by for sure. But is there anything that you're truly excited about that really is the sun is really starting to shine in all this inflation talk, the something that really has you feeling positive?
I think many businesses are adapting, right, to the fact that they're missing workers. They're trying to do things differently. Also the fact that because of the shortages of everything, I would guess that for many businesses, conditions have improved for workers because for decades, you could say that the owners or the management had what we would say the upper end because, there was many available workers. Now maybe for in the within those conditions, maybe it got better. So that's something that it's harder to measure at the moment in terms of like the broad stats that we're looking at. But when you go on the ground and you see people adapting and will continue to adapt, I think that that's an interesting point.
People often say that capitalism is bad. It drives me nuts because capitalism is a beautiful thing. Greed is bad. It's distinctly different than capitalism. And what you're seeing, I think, that I'm excited about to contribute, Dominic, is that the retraining market, the re-education market, even going as far as the wellness market for people to get clear on what they want and feel better going to work. And that marketplace has exploded because people are trying to go back to work and be more clear and dedicated to what they do. And I think that adds to your point about it adds more leverage to the employee. It adds a better quality to the employer, and it allows for people to come back to whatever job they'd go to be a little bit more clear and frankly give a damn when they go back to it, right? And I think that part's really quite exciting. It's almost like a bit of a new lease on your career.
So, like, just to think, we're working from home, I think it's staying. Not every day, but having the flexibility
In some
for
way.
mother, for parents, I think that's an awesome thing.
It's great. Well, thank you so much for this. I appreciate the time and your advice and look forward to chatting about this again. I think it's really clear for us to understand. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
This is the Shift Podcast.
Party and party and fun, 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 fun. Looking
All right. I don't want to work. I just want to bang on the drum all day. You got it. Welcome to Friday, friends. It's officially here, and we are going to flash back on our Friday morning to a time and an era with inflation being really, really crappy, too. You see, inflation is part of our conversation, understanding inflation and the impact of wages on inflation. You can catch it on the podcast. You can catch it coming up here in about an hour if you're sticking around on the shift. And it's worthwhile listen to hear that, by the way. So we wanted to flash back to a time when inflation was as high or higher than it is today. The most recent highest of high times since then. And it only seems appropriate that we flash back to 1983. That's where you're hearing all of your music from. We will celebrate some music. We've got some other stories for you as well that happened in 1983. Pierre Trudeau was the prime minister then. Justin Trudeau, the prime minister now. And we're paying the price for it. So let's get started with the most connective of all the things, groceries, because most of us eat. And when we eat, we have to pay for things. So Ryan O'Donnell has assembled a bit of a list here for us of some prices of things today and prices of things way back in the day in 1983. Inflation, 1983, 7.7%. Now, while it's inconsistent up and down in what's going on here year over year, it was terrible, terrible, terrible. Getting better, but still really, really bad. Still the worst, but other than this. So I went looking for steaks, Ryan, to go shopping. And so three steaks, $50 or $60.
Yeah.
Big steaks. Those are big steaks. Like they're heavy, thick steaks, right? Proper grilling steaks. And so things are very, very expensive. So my numbers are from today and your numbers are from back in the day, from 1983, right?
They are. Yes.
So let's play this little game of today and back in the day. You ready to go? You ready to go?
Yeah. Let's do it. Yep. I'm ready.
I ready to go. Okay. So today, sirloin steak, 1 kilogram, $26.39 a kilo. Back in the day, 1983.
$4.
Wow.
Whoa. Isn't that brutal? $4.
Holy cow.
So I should say, actually, no. So closer, my list here, the dollar, I have to convert it. It's a bit closer to 6.75 Canadian pound.
But wouldn't mine be? Yeah. So mine are Canadian?
Yes. You're looking at the Canadian prices. I'm looking at American ones right now.
So conveniently, $6. The government has taken off inflation, yes, prices of inflation from pre-1995 now, so they don't look so bad. So they've taken those prices off the website, the StatsCan website. We don't get stats from that make the government look bad anymore, it seems like, which only seems appropriate. Okay, so convert yours. Let's stick to all things Canadian. So do the rough estimate, okay?
Yeah.
Ground beef, 1 kilogram today, $12.52 on average. Back in the day, 1983.
It's $4.
Jeez.
Yep.
Okay. Chicken. 1 kilogram of chicken. Today, $8.04 on average. Back in the day, 1983.
$1.50.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. A dollar. Can you believe that? Oof.
That's amazing. Just loading. Let's see, I'll take a second. I'll do this one first.
I can give you some other prices of things if you need a sec, too.
No, I've got a text here that I want to double check. Bacon. Bacon. 500 grams of bacon. $8.55 today. Back in the day, 1983?
$1.50.
You know what? Who needs a dollar store in 1983? Because that's everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you? That's a meal right there. Like we should say, of all of the food that we've listed right now, it still is not as expensive as like one steak is right now. For the prices right. of the chicken, the beef, everything, it's still not as expensive as one steak is today.
Mm-hmm. In 1983, Texter says, from Winnipeg, I was the assistant manager of a national retail store. I made $3.65 an hour.
That was minimum wage was in the was three yeah around $3 in mm-hmm. in the U.S.
I think my first job was $5 an hour minimum wage.
$5. That's what my mom told me. It was when she started working in the early 80s or
mid late 80s.
Early 80s. It would have been it would have been $5. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, but when you take the if it's $3.65 an hour, and we do a little quick maths. And so what was the last one we did? We did bacon.
Bacon at a dollar.
So and it was $8.99 now. What's the number?
Or sorry, a $1.50 for a bacon.
So $9. $9 divided by $1.50 equals mm-hmm. six. So times 3.65. So it's up 600%. So that retail job, if you were working as national manager of a retail store, based on the discrepancy between bacon, if you were to make the same quality of living based on these numbers, is $21.90 an hour to work in a grocery store today, based on the price of the food.
Well, I just looked it up. $5 Canadian in 1983 is worth $13 today.
Okay, so two and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So it's six. So you would be better off, based on the price of bacon, you know, on working today, right? So 21, you'd have to make $22 an hour. So you were better off in 1983. That's what it is. You can text in your prices, definitely. By the way, 877-399-9898. Chris says chips, $3.99 now, $1.50 in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is Ryan quoting Canadian dollars per kilo? Yes, he's converting it from American dollars kilo dollars.
I am converting it, yes. Yes.
Apples. Price of apples has really, really been high lately. Trying to find apples on the cheap is tough. You got to go to the big stores for that. Even Costco's apples have not been great, and they're old, too. You cut them in half, they're brown in the middle. Stuff like that. I've noticed an awful lot of that. 1 kilogram of apples today, almost $5. Anywhere on sale, $2.99 to $3. Anything $2.49 or less is a deal. Average price today, $5. Flashback Friday. So today and then back in the day is going to be 1983. How much, Ryan, for apples?
Sorry, hold on one second. I just lost it. Do. Man, that can't be right. Yeah, 59 cents. That's can't American. Be right. So yeah, $1.25 Canadian. Yep.
59 cents, that'll be a buck Canadian, yeah.
Yeah, buck Canadian.
So
yep.
Times five. So there you go. You're times seven, you're times five. And how much did you say the dollar is worth? 2.5 times, right? So the mm-hmm. prices have gone up 5 times. The dollar is worth 2.5 times more. Now, the dollar, it's not really fair because the dollar, that's comparative to other currencies. But, okay, the big one, 1983. 1983, prices on gas. Anyone want to take a guess, by the way? Text it in, 877-399-9898. Today, the average price is $1.56.8. Now, that is cheaper, definitely, than if you live in Vancouver and more expensive than if you live in Alberta. But that is an average of prices to try to get a number. So today, that's the price back in the day, 1983. Ryan?
27 cents a liter.
27 cents a liter. I remember the price wars of 29.9. So, again, 2.5 times on the currency, 5 times on that. We're roughly about the same for the price of gas. If you go the 8 times of bacon, you're at the same number. This is the inflation and the price of things that we are looking at in the world today. And that is incredible to think for our Flashback Friday. Those are the numbers. Also incredible to think that when the pandemic started, nobody was driving. And I think I paid 76 cents a liter was the cheapest I paid for gasoline.
Oh, yeah. That's the cheapest I've ever seen gas in my life, I think.
I have to tell you
that I could.
It's nice now driving a diesel, right? Because diesel's cheaper.
A little bit cheaper. So that's great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the price, I think Melanie had paid $1.59 or $1.60 in Ottawa, and I paid $1.24 in Alberta. The one thing that's, and that's only, that's provincial taxes, right? Like you BC lower mainland folks, when you go to the pump and you see those prices, that's all provincial tax. That's not all of it. That's not true. Anything over and above what any other province pays is all provincial tax, because the carbon taxes are taking such a large chunk of this now. And they're taxing you for driving and going to work and all that stuff. But in Ontario and in Lower Mainland in particular, BC in general, but Lower Mainland in particular, Vancouver Central, like that's the price. That's all provincial taxes. So it's not the price of gas. We have to be clear on that. The price of gas isn't really a whole lot cheaper in one place or another. Alberta just has the benefit of dropping their provincial tax when prices go high because they're already making money on selling it. So they do that, which peels it down about 13 cents a liter. 1983 is the Flashback Friday year here on The Shift. Now, I don't know if you remember this. I mean, Kat in Gimli probably remembers this very clearly. I'm curious if Kat has thoughts on this one, too. Air Canada Flight 143. You remember that? They filled it up with the wrong amount of fuel. Pounds and kilograms. That's a tough one. Made a very infamous crash landing near Gimli Airport, north of Winnipeg. And it was featured in an episode of Mayday.
A brand new 767.
Fuel pressure. Why would that be?
How come I have no instruments?
A catastrophic failure at 26,000 feet.
Winnipeg, Air Canada 143.
Air Canada 143, go ahead.
Just lost both engines.
Holy cow!
I'm talking to a dead man.
How far are we from Gimli?
You're approximately 12 miles from Gimli right now.
I guess I'll just slip it.
The crew is out of options and running out of time. They're at the controls of a 95-ton jet that's quickly falling from the sky.
That was amazing. That was an amazing episode to salute those folks at Mayday for that one, too. It left Montreal, and they had put in pounds, not kilos, of fuel. And they got all the way to the Manitoba border, and then bleep, 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 they ran out of fuel. Some quick thinking by pilots is what their job. They look around for alternates to land, and they had to get down quick to be able to do it. Now, this is a 767. This is not a small airplane. Thankfully, it only had 61 passengers on it. I'm guessing a 767 probably can carry 300 people. If it's full, I'm just guessing. I don't know what the seating arrangements were back then. You probably had more leg room, so maybe not quite that many. So where they landed was Royal Canadian Air Force Base Gimli, Manitoba, which was a former landing strip. It was converted into a racetrack. So they did. They brought it down like a glider, a 767. If you've ever seen one, they are big. It resulted in no serious injuries to passengers or persons on the ground, only minor damage to the aircraft, well, other than skidding, right? But the aircraft was repaired and remained in service until its retirement in 2008. Would you want to know if...
Kinda. It's like it's a miracle.
But you want to know if you're on that plane, though?
If I got on the plane and the pilot was like, this is the Gimli glider, I'd be like, yeah, okay, hell yeah, let's do it. You know? And if, then that's like a badge of honor. I was on the Gimli glider. I mean, after the crash, you know, it was fine, mm-hmm. but you know, that's kind of cool. I'd mm-hmm. say, I'd be okay with it.
Yeah. That's a car show. I think was, someone had texted it was going on. I don't remember that from the report.
It was. Yeah. And there were actually two kids riding their bikes on the tarmac when the plane was coming down. And so mm-hmm. they reacted with like split second, almost getting hit by the plane. And he actually had to ram the plane's landing gear on the guardrail to slow it down enough because they were going to run out of space. And somehow mm-hmm. it didn't explode or kill anybody. It's an amazing story.
Trucker Dan also says that one of those kids almost got hit by another plane years later. It's some other story now related.
Okay, well, that's
so there you go. Well, that's 220 passengers, 767. Still a lot. Okay, so there you go. Gimli glider. Da, 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 da. Flashback Friday, 1983. Okay, let's get through some fun stuff real quick here. We took a big step forwards to our modern age. We had the Dynatac cell phone.
Eventually, seeing people using cellular phones may seem as commonplace as someone checking time on an electronic watch, figuring on an electronic calculator, or programming on an electronic computer. Industry watchers say there are only a few thousand cellular phones in use right now, but that number is expected to grow considerably within the next few years during the cellular revolution.
They nailed that, eh?
Yeah.
The retail price is about $4,000 back in the day. If you adjust that for inflation, $11,300 would be what you'd pay today for that phone.
Jeez, that's cheaper than an iPhone.
You needed to work out 3 days a week to be able to carry it. The minimum wage in the United States, $3.35 an hour in 84, which meant it was required 1,100 hours, almost 1,200 hours worth of work, 7 months, 7 days a week, or 5 days a week, 40-hour work week, just to pay for the phone. That's good math. I like that. So the first commercial wireless call on a Dynatac from his Mercedes-Benz was placed by David Meehlin to Bob Barnett. And there you go. It was we've been sucked in ever since. 1983 was the first year of a certain video game console that you might remember. It's one of the few games that Ryan has actually never played. And that's not even like 50,000 hours or like any limit, just like never played. The Atari 5200.
If you think ColecoVision plays all Atari cartridges...
You mean it can't?
Here's Pac-Man on ColecoVision. But here's Pac-Man for the Atari 5200 Super System.
Now you're talking.
And it doesn't work on ColecoVision.
But won't their adapter?
It won't play Super System cartridges.
Not pole position?
Not this pole position.
Not centipede?
Not this centipede. Only on the Atari 5200 Super System.
But aren't they hard to find?
They're everywhere.
Everywhere?
The Atari 5200 Super System.
Also, 1983, the best-selling car was sexy. Actually, no, not at all, but it did kind of get the job done.
Like gold itself, there's a car with a tradition of being an investment. Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme for 1983. If you'd bought a new 1979 Cutlass Supreme Coupe with a standard engine, chances are you could sell it today and get back about 90% of what you paid. Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme, historically a golden investment.
Oldsmobile!
Have one built for you.
It was so popular, everybody just called it the Cutlass. But the Toyota Camry was released to North America that year, and you can get a Toyota Camry today, but you can't get a Cutlass. So maybe they did better. Our favorite movie is Christmas Vacation here on The Shift. Ryan and I will agree to that, yeah?
It's the best Christmas movie.
Yep. Now, we wouldn't have that movie without this one that came out in 1983, National Lampoon's Vacation.
On our way to California in the morning, the big vacation, the whole family, Wally World.
If you're thinking of taking the tribe cross country, this is the automobile you should be using.
Dad, I forgot, why are we flying?
Because getting there is half the fun.
I don't know why they call this stuffed hamburger helper. It does just fine by itself, huh?
You're the gourmet around here, Ed.
Okay, let's go. Come on, Edna.
Play off.
1983 in music, of course, Ryan's.
This generation. Was this 83?
Now we can go from the top down, 1 to 100, or we can do it the other way and go 100 first, because then you know the songs are a little more strange.
Well, you should put it at 420. Not that narrative, thank you.
Thank you.
I said.
This gem here also.
This song is such a meme. I love it.
Spandau Ballet, by the way. This one.
My favorite hair metal album and favorite hair metal song of all time. All time.
Bryan Adams, Straight from the Heart. I Won't Hold You Back from Toto. Wanna Be Starting Something. We got Michael Jackson in there too. David Bowie, China Girl. Laura Branigan, Solitaire, The Tube, She's a Beauty. As you go through the list of all these songs, 1983, such a good year. Culture Club was making music that year. Taco putting on the Ritz. That was terrible. After the fire, Der Kommissar. And then I think that, let me do this one here, because I think this one belongs for our... other ones, Electric Avenue, Eddie Grant, we had Greg Cunband, we also had Eurythmics, we had Hall & Oates, Maneater, Men at Work Down Under, Irene Cara, Flashdance, Billie Jean, Michael Jackson, Police, Every Breath You Take, all of these songs from a fantastic year in music, and I figure this will take us out. Why not? I love it. Ryan's confused. He'll get it in a second. Flashback Friday. Welcome to your Friday, June 2nd. Certainly hope you did you guys find, what is this text? Did you find my makeout mixtape? Oh, I get it. All 1983 songs was your makeout mixtape. Oh, that's very good. By the way, songs were really long back then.
Yeah, what the, I have no idea what this is yet.
No? Everyone knows songs. Come on, you know. Shift heads.
Oh, this song.
You don't know Mr. Roboto? Sticks?
Oh, I know Mr. Roboto.
You know all the songs. Ryan O'Donnell knows all the music, man.
This is the Shift Podcast.
Are you
okay?
Okay.
Are you okay with
877-399-9898? You can text in your thoughts on these stories that make you ponder. I would say, Ryan, that you and I can kick back that day. We'll do a whole bunch of role reversal on that game showy day, and
it'd
be awesome. Hey, we'll sit back.
I don't. Relax. It would be weird to have to answer the questions. I kind of like asking them because I never have to worry about being wrong.
Mm-hmm. I know. There will be a day when you have to compete in it, too. So don't you worry there, mister.
I'm aware.
It'll come. All right. Are you okay with selling your home?
Selling your home.
It's better than selling someone else's home, I suppose.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm so far removed from real estate. I'm like, because I just moved to the next place, right? Oh, rent's up. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm not living here anymore. I'm on to the next place. So I've never had to go through it. I will have to go through it soon here. And it seems like just so much work. Just an absurd amount of work. Finding out, you don't just go through and take pictures of your house. No, you have to hire someone to stage the house to make it look less lived in, more mass appealing. And then you can't even live at your house while that's happening.
No, but it's problematic.
It's like when fast food restaurants have someone make their burgers look absolutely perfect on a commercial, but your home. And it's just, it's wild to me how much goes into making the house ready for the actual sale.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it, it's kind of like selling a car in that you spend all this time cleaning up your house, right? Because you've lived in it, say, for 8 years. And this is where we get it backwards. You live in it for 8 years and you don't replace the carpet and you got a crack in the window and that door jamb doesn't fit properly. And then you got that hole in the wall that Steve, your drunk buddy, put in, but you're like, we'll fix it later. I'm not going to spend the money now. But then when someone comes to buy your house, you put in the new carpet, you paint the walls, you fix the hole that Steve put in the wall. You do all the things that you've lived in a very banged up house for all those years just so someone else will buy it. And it's always the funniest thing for me. Same with cars, right? We drive around in Alberta. You prairie people will know. Cracked windshield is a thing that we live with here. We don't deal with rust like you Ontario people with salt on the roads, right? BC people have the cleanest cars, hands down. And any cars that come from Quebec, oh, dear God, they're full of rust for all the salt. And but we deal with rock chips constantly. Like, the reason why you don't go get your windshield repaired is because you will get a rock chip on the way home. And we do that for houses. We clean them all up. We fix them all up. And then we sell them to someone else. And then we go live in another broken down house again and go without. So that's the funny thing. Although, it is really cool. It's very similar, Ryan. When you move in a new place, you're excited. You're like, yeah, I'm going to decorate and do this. And this goes here. Right?
Yeah, I got excited about ordering a cool bath mat. Like, that's weird, but I can't wait for that bath mat. You know,
it is weird. Yeah, I'll give you that. But I mean, hey, if it's a bath mat, that's so cool. I was so excited. I put up new curtains in my bedroom today.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm like so excited.
Yeah.
Although, you know, I want to share something that it did occur to me. Maybe this is a good news story that we should share on Good News Tuesday. Nothing in my room other than the sheets on my bed and the mattress that I sleep on. There is nothing in my room. No, sheets on my bed, mattress and pillows, curtain rods, and of course my clothing, not including that. Everything in my room is used. I bought used off of an auction, an estate sale, a garage sale, marketplace, everything. And I love everything in my room. That's new for me because I would always want to have the newest stuff. Even my TV, my buddy had an extra TV and it was virtually new. It was like 6 months old. I was like, well, I'll take it. He's like, cool. Here you go. What do you want for it? All right. So literally everything in my room, which is cool. To kind of feel like I'm being a little responsible there, you know? And I like my furniture better today than I did 3 years ago. So anyway, a little sidebar about houses. Everyone's got their thing. Well, it's a little big. That was actually quite a whole story. Listing your home is a big thing, right? When you get to that moment, you're like, yeah, we're ready. Let's do it. Then you make the phone call and then you have someone come pictures, but then it goes up online. You're like, ooh, it's real now. You got to make sure you have the description right. I actually stole a description from one of my neighbors when they sold their house really, really quickly. I copied and pasted their description and saved it for like a year and a half until it was time to sell my house because they wrote it so well.
Genius.
I did.
I love it.
It was so good. Now, this particular listing is perfect. A group of high school students, seniors in Maryland, had fun pranking their high school last week by attempting to sell it on Zillow.
For a low, low price of $42,069.
For the whole high school?
Yeah, whole high school.
Well, what a bargain.
This nice half working jail, as the post reads, can be yours. Uh-oh. The post says that it comes with 15 bathrooms complete with sewage issues and a private basketball court. The school district even had a little fun with this as well. Here's their response when we reached out yesterday.
You're suspended.
They say this is incredibly creative advertising, but we are stunned that the listers so vastly underestimated the value of this prime real estate with such amazing amenities. This won't be on the market for long.
Well, that's a good prank if you're going to do a prank. I think the asking price is a little bit low. CBS 9, by the way, for the story. The listing also promised that your neighbors are rodents and insects that will make you squeal. A group of Calgary seniors did the same prank a few years ago. What did they put up for sale? Their home?
They put up I believe it's Central. It's the high school right downtown Calgary, which is, they put it up for sale with a similar kind of twist. You know, it's a jail or this cursed, haunted building is up for sale. I like that the high school in question in this story got in on the fun and responded and said, hey, you know, it's not going to be on the market for long. It almost makes the prank not cool to the kids anymore. And that's impressive.
Would have been better, in my opinion, if they had said the current tenants are jerks.
Yeah,
they're disrespectful. They vandalize the place. They smell bad. I think that would be fun. All right. Are you okay with beauty pageants?
No, not really.
I am and I'm not.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, I don't think... Okay, so it's tough because there was a show, I think it's the Miss Universe pageant. And so they've got all these women from around the world and they create these unbelievable costumes, you know, that are basically walking pieces of art. There were the model from Ukraine had massive eagle wings with a sword, and then the American one had a moon on her head, and that's kind of fun. I don't really have a problem with that, but when you look back at some of the, you know, like the pageants from like the early 2000s, late 90s, like the Trump era stuff, it's very gross to go back and to see clips of those. I gotta say,
I don't think it's a competition that you put on a bikini.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it's creepy, man.
So, but I do like the part, you know. Well, I think that we should eradicate, take care of hungry worlds, that whole thing is like, but then you have these ones where these people, I think we're starting to see more of it, where they do things, or, you know, the fitness ones, like putting beauty pageants and fitness competitions, you know, the vanity of it, and the craft that goes into shaping your body, you know, then that's different for me. So I like, there are things where people do stuff and it's impressive stuff. And then there's the ones where people just get dressed and like, congratulations, you got dressed the best today, right? I don't think that stuff's very good. That part I don't get. But the other part where they, you know, like the fitness types of, anyway. Now, they're pretty simple. And all kinds of wild things have happened at beauty pageants over the years. Of course, we've seen that, you know. Well, how about this one?
Okay. Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Thank you very much, South Carolina.
That was the clip I was thinking of when I was trying to describe it, such as.
Such as. It's iconic. Absolutely iconic. I love it.
Because some people don't have maps and stuff. Or how about this time? Steve Harvey, boy, I like that guy. I like some of the work he does. He's really funny, and he does some really insightful work too, which is cool. He had this moment, though, that, well, this was tough, and he announced the wrong winner.
I have to apologize. The first runner-up is Colombia. Miss Universe 2015 is Philippines.
Now, he recovered well, and I thought it was going to be like Internet Meme City where he gets just roasted, and it didn't really. I mean, it did for a little bit, but it was nothing major.
It did. It wasn't really the fact that that happened. It was more the sentence, I have to apologize. People would take that little sound bite and use it for a million different other things. And it took the attention away from the actual event. So Steve got lucky that that's the meme.
It was an Oscar or an Emmy that was the wrong one. Remember that they announced the wrong
one?
La La
Land and Moonlight. Yeah. Moonlight. Oh.
That one was way bigger in the world of oopses. Now this one has happened, by the way. This is a new one. The husband of a recent beauty pageant contestant was in an all-out rage after his wife was named the runner-up. Imagine this. They always have the last two contestants, first and second place, standing side by side, and they kind of put the crown over this person, then they put the crown over that person, then they put the crown over this person, and then they announce the winner. That's what was happening. And then they announced the winner, and this guy's wife did not win. So he did what every proud husband would do. He rushed the stage, took the crown off the winner's head, and threw it on the floor. Yeah, so that was that. You can hear the announcers, whoa.
Yeah, I can't tell if they're going whoa or boo. Like, it's... Yeah.
Okay. Now I'm going to work on these names. They're new names to me, so work with me. Emanuele Bellini was being crowned Brazil's Miss Gay Moto Grosso 2023 on Saturday when the husband of second place winner Nathalie Becker rushed the stage, pulled the crown off the head, threw it on the floor, and tried to stomp on it a couple of times. According to TMZ, the event put out a statement reiterating that Bellini was indeed deemed the winner of this event, while also condemning the actions of the man, claiming they will be taking appropriate legal action after the ordeal. But you know what I want to know? I want to hear the conversation on the ride home in the taxi.
Because there's no way the wife would be happy. You know, like, that's the, you embarrassed me. That was not the way to handle this. That was just like pure anger energy that you did not need to direct on the stage in front of all these people and now thousands of people around the world. So
unless they have that kind of relationship where it's like, baby, I was protecting you, right? Like, maybe, thank you, baby. I should have won that. You know, like, you know, when people live in this, some people live in a world where the things they tell themselves, no matter how crazy they might be, they truly believe them. And they seem to pair up, those people. And then they're like, yeah, baby, you should have won that. You're the best hockey player ever. And meanwhile, they can't even skate. It's like Happy Gilmore trying out for a hockey team, right? I don't know. Just this loss of reality, I guess. But anyway, Smashing Crowns. Ta-da. Are you okay with pet kisses?
No. I can't. Me either. Freaks me out. Nope. No, I don't like the Gross. Licks. I don't. It doesn't matter what animal it is. I always have the same reaction from animals that I've just met to like my pseudo dog, my partner Laura's dog, Cora. Like whenever she tries to lick me, no. But she doesn't do it often. So, yeah, it just kind of grosses me out.
Well, I have had to settle for a couple of things in this, I have to say, because Harlow's so big. She used to be very mouthy and come and bite at your hands. Not like bite mm-hmm. them, but like be mouthy and chomp chomp at your hands to get your attention. Yep. And because her head, when you're walking, is above your hands, when she wants your attention, she just kind of pokes her head at you and at your hand, right? So as a result of the no-no-nos to the mouthiness, now she walks up, she gives you a little lick on the hand, which I also don't like, but that's a lot better for strangers, right?
Yeah, than a bite. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. And it's not like a bite. I mean, I put my hand in her mouth right on her molars and she'll chew on my finger just for fun when we're sitting there. But she will chew with her molars and she could literally bite, like my dog's so big she could break your arm in a bite. Right. And so, well, that bone, that tomahawk steak we had last weekend,
mm-hmm.
she bit through it, the bone. She like literally bit it in half. So
that bone was the size of my arm.
Yeah. And so anyway, yeah. So pet kisses, nah, that's kind of gross. I'm not keen on that. Yeah, I'll give pets kisses on the cheeks. I like doing that though. I think that's fun. Anyway,
absolutely.
This, like pet kisses is one thing. Don't kiss wild animals. Can we just all agree that's not good? A juvenile raccoon in Maine was euthanized, then tested for rabies, after a woman brought it to a pet store for a nail trim. And some customers thought it would be all right to give it some kisses.
Authorities in Maine had to put the juvenile raccoon down to test it for rabies. While waiting for the nail trimming, many people in that Petco handled the baby raccoon. Some even kissed it. When the manager found out that there was a wild animal in the store, the raccoon, she asked the woman to leave and contacted the Maine CDC and the Warden Service. Both agencies are investigating. The rabies results, by the way, came back negative.
Yeah, but you can't test for stupid.
No, I don't understand, though, and I'm sure there's a reason for this, but I don't understand why they had to euthanize it and then test it for rabies.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do that test. And I think it's mostly because it was a wild raccoon that this lady literally picked up off the street and was like, this is my pet now. I just saw Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and I want a rocket raccoon. And then I imagine that's why they euthanize it, because Or maybe there's another reason, but still, so many terrible decisions have been made in this. Are you okay?
Well, there's lots of rabies in those animals, the trash pandas, in certain areas. The Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife is currently searching for the unidentified woman who brought the raccoon to the pet store. And how did they get the raccoon? Did she just leave? The agency reminded Maine residents that it's illegal to possess wildlife, that they should never try to handle, feed, or move a wild animal. It's illegal in Canada to keep a raccoon as a pet. In this country, 25 people in 6 provinces, Quebec, Ontario, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Nova Scotia, and BC, have died of rabies since 1924. Statistically, you're going to be okay, right? But I'm just saying, like, let's keep the raccoon kissing to minimums. I mean, that can't smell good either, right?
No, I mean, they're called trash pandas for a reason.
That's gross. All right, they're cute though. Very cute. Sometimes the dog will sneak off a lick that you're not expecting. That happens. But the people who go in for the full on smoochy smooches, like licks on the lips and the I love you, puppy.
Ugh. Yeah.
Right? Oh, God, that's gross.
Thanks for listening to the Shift Podcast.
Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the show and share with anyone you like. Get it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and CuriousCast.ca.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.